Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Robert N. Davis presiding. All of the business before this court draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this Honorable Court. Please be seated.
Good morning. I'm Chief Judge Davis. To my right is Judge Allen, and to my left is Judge Meredith. We're here today in the matter of Atencio against Wilkie, docket number 16-1561, raising a question of whether gastrointestinal reflux disease, otherwise known as GERD, is a medically unexplained chronic multi-system illness, or otherwise known as MUCMI or MUCMI, but M-U-C-M-I. Would counsel for both parties please note your appearance for the record?
Good morning, Your Honors. Christian McTarnigan for the appellate, Ms. Ebony Atencio from the law firm of Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick, and with me at counsel's table, Mr. Bradley Hennings also.
Mr. Hennings, good to see you. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Catherine Bell, for the secretary, and with me at the
council
desk is Eric
Cassidy. Good, thank you. Welcome here. Thank you. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Each party will have 30 minutes to present your respective arguments. Counsel for the appellant, do you wish to reserve any portion of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. 10 minutes, please.
Okay. Thank you. Very good. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The Board misinterpreted the law when it found that GERD could never be entitled to the presumption of service connection under 38 CFR section 3.317 as a medically unexplained chronic multi-symptom illness, or MUCMI. That's on page 6 of the record. That is not the rule. GERD is not excluded by the regulation from being considered a MUCMI on a case-by-case basis under subsection 2I. There are two separate and distinct ways a gastrointestinal disability can be afforded the presumption as a MUCMI under the plain language of the regulation. The first way, the automatic way, is under 2I, subsection 2I.
Is that the functional?
Yes, Your Honor.
So under that, talk about the difference between the structural and functional coverage for GERD.
Sorry, Your Honor?
You're about to talk about the difference between the functional and structural coverage for GERD?
Yes, Your Honor. So the first way, the automatic way, is if you have a functional gastrointestinal disability, without any further development with qualifying service, you're entitled to the presumption and service connection for that disability. The second way, the case-by-case way, is found under subsection 2I. There, if the structural gastrointestinal disability, such as GERD, which is involved in this case, if it's determined medically on an individualized basis to be without conclusive pathophysiology or etiology with the cluster of signs and symptoms, it too can be considered a MUCMI under that subsection of the regulation.
So I have two questions. So the first one is, for purposes of the question we're answering today, is 3.317, in your view, ambiguous?
No, Your Honor, it is not. It is plain.
Okay. So what if one were to say this is the way 3.317 reads, okay, which is 2iB, right, says you can get this presumptive service connection for something that is a multi-illness symptom or disease, okay? And then it says, such as, and lists 1, 2, 3 as examples. Are you with me so far?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Then, little 2i defines what that MUCMI is for purposes of filling out the list in that earlier section. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do see what you're saying, Your Honor.
So if it's that, okay, if that's the way the regulatory scheme is set, it would seem really bizarre if you had something that said functional gastrointestinal disorders excluding structural, but then you go to 2i, which fills in the rest of that list, and now you put a structural gastrointestinal disease back on the list, right? So that's where, I'm telling you, that's where I am in reading the statute, and so for just one judge up here, you've got to convince me that what I just said is wrong.
All right, Your Honor. Well, let me try. So the reason why we think that those two subsections must be read separately is because they come from different parts of the statutory scheme. And so when you look to 1117 subsection A2C, that gave the secretary the power to add disabilities as MUCMEs by name when, pursuant to 1118, there is an association, a scientific association of a connection between service in the Persian Gulf and the disability. And that's why the secretary added FIDGETs under subsection 2IB, because the NAS study, which is noted in the Federal Register, connected FIDGETs, functional gastrointestinal disabilities, to Persian Gulf service. And so the secretary added it by name under that part of the statutory scheme. The secretary could not have added structural gastrointestinal disabilities by name because of the requirement of 1118.
But what about the fact that it wasn't just that the secretary added FIDGETs or whatever,
functional gastrointestinal.
Okay. I can handle only one acronym at a time.
That's fair.
So it's not just that they added that, but they specifically, or he, the secretary, specifically included the parenthetical that excluded the structural, right? I mean, I think the argument could have been stronger had it just included in the list of one little I, functional, and said nothing about structural. But what do we do with the fact that that language, excluding?
Well, I think the distinction between why, or the reason why 2i and 2ii should be read separately is because 2i was added under the secretary's power of 1117B to add MUCMEs by name with scientific evidence. And so the exclusion, using your word, Judge Allen, of structural under that part of the regulation was only because the NSA study didn't support an association, a definitive association. However, there's a whole other part of the statutory scheme under 1117C, which gives the secretary the power to add or to afford presumptive service connection, to disabilities on a case-by-case basis. And so the secretary was only given the power to afford conditions presumptive service connection. The secretary wasn't given the power under the regulation to explicitly exclude from the whole regulatory scheme disabilities that on a case-by-case individualized basis with medical evidence supporting it were found to be MUCMEs. So 1117B tracks with 2I, adding them by name, adding the disabilities by name. 1117C was the power that Congress gave the secretary to be able to, on a case-by-case basis. And we know that the secretary understood this distinction because in 2010, the secretary removed a subsection of the regulation. It's not there anymore because it specifically said the power to designate what a MUCMI was solely reserved to the secretary. But what was happening is that adjudicators were looking at the statute and only allowing the presumption to apply for fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, and at that time IBS, which is now functional gastrointestinal disabilities. And they removed it because they wanted to remind adjudicators that whether a disability is a MUCMI, other than those three specifically enumerated under subsection 2I, they could make the decision, just like they do in any other case, as to whether that disability, with medical evidence supporting it, of course, could be considered a MUCMI. And that's found in the October 7th, 2007 Federal Register, Your Honors. And so because the regulation tracks the separate powers that the Secretary was given, our position is that they must be read separately. There are two ways that a veteran's disability, a gastrointestinal disability, can be found to be a MUCMI under the plain language of the regulation, Your Honors.
Mr. McTarnigan, would you concede that if that's the case, this is certainly not a good example of good draftsmanship?
I think it could be more clear, Your Honor, but I think
that's an understatement.
I think that because there have been two separate subsections, there's a 2I and a 2II, I think that that was a way that the Secretary was trying to explain in the regulation that there are two separate ways. And I think that's supported by the Federal Register and the statute.
But wouldn't it have made more sense, your argument, if the, and this is going to be parsing legislative drafting, so I should defer to Judge Meredith, but if, in fact, instead of being too little I, what is too little I now were capital C. In other words, two, one little I, C. And the reason being, that would make more sense for your argument when it says you get this presumptive connection for A, an undiagnosed illness, B, what's there now that has this list, and then C, what's now 2-2. But the way it's written now, it says under sub I, you get it in these two situations, capital A, capital B. You then go to another section, and it says, and by the way, we use this term up there. This is what the term means. So that would mean, to me, I think, all that two little I is doing is defining essentially what is set forth in B. Do you see what I mean?
I do see what you mean, Your Honor. But in a case, let's use fibromyalgia, for example. In a case where a veteran has qualifying service in the Persian Gulf and they have fibromyalgia, and I use this example in my reply brief, the veteran does not have to demonstrate that it's of unknown etiology or pathophysiology. The veteran just needs to demonstrate qualifying service and fibromyalgia, a diagnosis of fibromyalgia. So if 2I was only used to explain what what the phrase MUCMI means, which is in subsection 2IB, then that veteran would also have to show an inconclusive pathophysiology and etiology with the cluster of signs and symptoms. However, that's not how the regulation is applied.
Well,
that's not how
the
regulation works.
It could be. A different way to say that would be normally that was. So if you ever wanted to add a number 4 to the list, okay, because we've got chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and then the functional gastrointestinal. If you want to add a number 4 to that list, you have to satisfy the definitions in sub 2i. For the 3 that are listed, the Secretary has made a conclusive determination, at least for now, that they qualify, and so you don't have to go through the definitional hurdle. I mean, why wouldn't that be an equally plausible way to look at that?
Because I think that ignores the interplay between 1117 and 1118. Because the Secretary needs to have scientific evidence, such as an NAS study that the Secretary was able to get for the functional gastrointestinal disabilities. In order to add it by name, the Secretary needs to have that scientific evidence. And so adding a disability by name to the statute comes from 1117B, which must be supported by scientific evidence, which is found in 1117A. So I don't think that for the Secretary to add it by name, that disability needs to be medically unexplained. For the Secretary to add it by name, the disability needs to have a definitive association proven by scientific evidence to be added to the regulation. And that's why I think it's different, Your Honor.
Can I jump in there? The language that we're talking about, this excluding structural gastrointestinal diseases, it comes under 2i. which starts out, for purposes of this section, for the entire section, how do you give meaning to those words under the interpretation that you're putting forth? If the excluding language applies to the entire section, but you're essentially saying it doesn't apply in too little I.
I see the part of the regulation that you're referring to, the first clause in 2I. I would say that it's our position that a chronic qualifying disability, so the phrase that comes after for this section, is defined both by an undiagnosed illness, the medically unexplained that are related to the regulation by scientific evidence, the chronic fatigue syndrome, the fibromyalgia, and the functional gastrointestinal, as well as these other medically unexplained disabilities on a case-by-case basis.
So if these three under B, 1, 2, and 3, those are meant to be examples of conditions that, in your words, I think was automatically qualified, then they also have listed there an excluding. Does it not suggest that that is never going to be an example?
I don't think it does, Your Honor, because then that would undermine the entire case-by-case analysis that's required of any other disability other than those three specifically enumerated. And so the parentheses in subsection A2IB3, B3 for short, those parentheses were only because the NSA study or a study at this point in time does not show that definitive association. But everything else is just required to be the more or less likely than not, given the benefit of the doubt rule. And so the automatic doesn't require any sort of extra showing. But that doesn't mean the case-by-case analysis is completely written out of the regulation for the structural gastrointestinal disabilities.
Mr. McTarnigan, just as an aside, do you read the language in 2i, beginning with, for purposes of this section, the term medically unexplained chronic multi-symptom illness means a diagnosed illness without conclusive pathophysiology or etiology? Do you read that phrase, pathophysiology or etiology, as disjunctive or conjunctive?
We read it as an or, Your Honor, and not as an and, consistent with the position that we took in Mr. Stewart's case.
You read it disjunctively, not conjunctively.
Either or, yes, Your Honor.
Yes.
Can I back up a minute? 2015, the parties here agreed to remand this case for consideration of 3.317. Does that play into this at all in deciding what these words mean? Is it subject to more than one interpretation that it was remanded at one point to consider whether GERD would qualify?
I'm not sure that it does automatically mean that the regulation could be interpreted in multiple ways, Your Honor. I think, from my understanding, of what happened, the board didn't consider the presumption at all, and the veteran did have qualifying service in the Persian Gulf. So that's why it was added to the joint motion. I'm not sure if it means definitively that there are two separate and contrary or, you know, disparate in ways to interpret the regulation.
Would there have been a need to remand it if, as I believe the Secretary is arguing, as a matter of law, GERD does not qualify under 3.317?
And I think because it would otherwise be harmless error, Your Honor. I think it supports an argument that the board on a case-by-case basis needs to determine whether structural gastrointestinal disabilities like GERD need to be considered under the presumption. I would agree with you.
So under B3, the parenthetical, it says excluding structural gastrointestinal diseases, number one, what's the regulatory history of that exclusion? And number two, you're telling me it means except for in certain cases.
So to answer your first question, Your Honor, functional gastrointestinal disabilities were added by name to the regulation, was proposed in November of 2010, and then the final rule issued in July of 2011. And so because the Secretary had scientific evidence by way of an NAS study that functional gastrointestinal disabilities were definitively associated with service in the Persian Gulf, they are entitled to the presumption. And so, and to answer your second question, Your Honor, which I believe was asking about the parentheses in the exclusion, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That was added because at that point in time, the Secretary only had the scientific evidence pursuant to his statutory authority under 1117B and 1118 to add functional gastrointestinal disabilities by name. They didn't have that evidence of the concrete definitive association between structural gastrointestinal disabilities and the Persian Gulf. But that doesn't mean, as Your Honor alluded to, that on the case-by-case basis, with medical evidence on the individualized circumstance of the case, that a veteran's structural gastrointestinal disability could not be a MUCMI. A little tongue-tied there, Your Honor. My apologies.
If it met either the pathophysiology requirement or the etiology requirement, it possibly could be a MUCMI.
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. And I see that my time is winding down. If there are no further questions, may I conclude?
Please.
We ask that this court remand to the board for a determination whether Ms. Atencio's GERD is a MUCMI and to obtain medical evidence to support that determination. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. The court should affirm the board's March 2016 decision because it properly determined that GERD is not a medically unexplained chronic multi-symptom illness, or MUCMI, because it is a structural gastrointestinal GI disorder, which, unlike functional GI disorders, is not a MUCMI because it is a structural or organic disease that's characterized by abnormalities seen on X-ray, endoscopy, lab results, or other objective signs of injury or disease.
So is your position, before we get into the statutory numbers and do all of that again, is your position that GERD is, because it is a structural gastrointestinal disease, it is automatically off the table?
Yes, Your Honor.
So I had not considered something fully until Judge Meredith asked this question a moment ago. But what then do we do with the fact that there is an order in the case, right? There was a JMR?
Yes, Your Honor.
In which the Secretary took the position that remand was required. And this is from page 38 of the record. Says, because the board did not discuss whether presumptive entitlement to service connection for GERD may have been warranted pursuant to 38 U.S.C. section 1117, frustrating judicial review. And then it went on and it says the parties agree that the board should consider whether appellant is a Persian Gulf veteran as contemplated by 1117, and if so, whether presumptive service entitlement to service connection based on that statute and the regulatory provisions of 3.317 is warranted. You've made an argument in this case that somehow the appellant is sort of precluded from doing things because of the JMR. It seems to me your position to the court today is entirely at odds with the position the Secretary took in the joint motion to remand.
No, Your Honor, because the joint motion for remand was for the board to consider all issues that can be the appellant's guard can be considered under. The board did not do so in the first instance. So,
well, but what I just read you said that this provision was to remand so the board can consider whether GERD is entitled to presumptive entitlement to service connection under 3.317, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
But you just told me that GERD is completely off the table, right? So
yes, Your Honor.
I think those are inconsistent. So my fundamental question is, why shouldn't we say, regardless of what the statute actually means, in this particular case, the Secretary is bound by his earlier position in the litigation?
Your Honor, in that joint motion for remand, the board erred by not considering 3.317 in the first instance. So it will be very difficult for the court to consider that, whether the board properly determined that issue, and that's why the parties decided to remand for the board to consider that issue, because it had not considered that issue in the first instance.
Why is it error if it's, as a matter of law, impossible to get benefits, in your view, for GERD under this provision?
Because the court would not have had an opportunity to consider whether the board properly determined that issue, because the board did not consider it at all. So the parties remanded for the board to consider the issue for the first instance. And in this case, the board properly did so by finding the GERD is excluded from consideration under 3.317.
So, Ms. Vell, your position is that there is no room for any case-by-case determinations on structural GERD. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And why exactly is that?
Your Honor, because all subsection 2 does is to explain what constitutes a MOPME for purposes of fulfilling the requirement of subsection 1. And the Secretary's interpretation is supported by the plain meaning of the regulation and also by the legislative history. For example, in the beginning of subsection 2, it states, for purposes of this section, MOPME is, and then it goes on to explain what a MOPME is. In addition, according to the October 2010 Federal Register, 3.317 was amended to clarify that the two included diseases were only examples, and that adjudicators, when adjudicating under subsection 1, should consider the term MOPME as it is defined under subsection 2. Therefore, Your Honor, that Federal Register makes it clear the diseases are considered under subsection 1 using the definition of MOPME as it is defined under subsection 2. In addition, it makes it clear that the only diseases that are considered under subsection 1 are those that have not been included or excluded. For example, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and at that time, irritable bowel syndrome, which was later amended to expand to all functional GI disorders and exclude all structural GI disorders, including GERD and inflammatory bowel diseases such as ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease.
Could I just ask one question to follow up before Judge Davis follows up?
Yes.
You've spent a lot of time talking about the Federal Register. I want to get your position on what I asked the Appellant's Counsel as well. Do you believe that for purposes of the questions we are addressing today, that 3.317 is ambiguous?
No, Your Honor. Based on the plain meaning of the regulation, the subsection 2 says for purposes of this section, a MOPME is, and then it explains what a MOPME is, and also based on the explanation from the legislative history, the
well,
Federal Register.
But do we have to go and look at the legislative history because if the statute is not ambiguous, then whatever is in the Federal Register is what the regulation is. It doesn't matter, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so I just wanted to make sure that both parties seem to agree that this is not ambiguous. Okay.
And just to finish my line of thought there, what is your answer, Ms. Bell, to Mr. Matarnikin's explanation of the parenthetical in 2i, excluding structural gastrointestinal disease? As I understood his explanation, NAS did some studies that dealt with the functional gastrointestinal disorders, but not the structural, and therefore they were included here, but you could do a case-by-case assessment based on little two little I.
Your Honor, in July 2011, the Federal Register amended 3.317 to include all functional GI disorders, replacing irritable bowel syndrome, because those studies connecting functional GI disorders to GAL4 deployment. And the registry specifically noted that there were insufficient evidence connecting structural GI disorders to the GAL4 deployment. And actually went on to say that, to answer a comment, they wanted to include GERD and structural GI disorders to the regulation, and the VA responded by noting that GERD, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, are structural or organic diseases that are characterized by abnormalities that can be seen in X-ray, endoscopy, lab results, and other objective signs of injury or diseases. So it distinguished structural GI disorders from functional GI disorders in explaining that GERD could not be included or other structural GI disorders could not be included.
In the Federal Register, it talked about that, like you said, there was a positive association found between functional gastrointestinal disorders and Gulf War service, and that there was insufficient or inadequate evidence to determine whether there was a relationship between structural gastrointestinal disorders and Gulf War service. So in the regulation, it talks about Federal Register that rulemaking was limited to clarifying the scope of the functional disorders. But now you're asking us to say that by adding in that positive finding, the positive association to the list of automatic conditions, that VA also explicitly intended to categorically exclude something based on the National Academy's finding of insufficient evidence. Is that how you're asking us to interpret what happened with this rulemaking?
Yes, Your Honor, in addition to having insufficient evidence to connect structural GI disorders to the GAL4 deployment, it also noted that GERD are different from functional GI disorders because they are structural or organic disorders that are characterized by abnormalities that can be seen. And the goal of Congress when it created 1117 was to compensate diseases that had symptoms that could not be explained, and wanted to exclude diseases that were had is readily diagnosable diseases such as diabetes or MS. And so GERD, you know, GERD can be seen. So, for example, in chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and functional GI disorders, when a veteran has symptoms, credible symptoms, and they go to a doctor, and the doctor performs diagnostic tests, the tests come out negative, normal. But when a veteran has structural GI disorders and they go to a doctor, the test shows abnormalities that are physical. So these symptoms are connected to physical cause, and the medical community can clearly understand the symptoms and the cause of these symptoms.
So where the excluding language was added to the regulation is in 2 little I, capital B, which, according to your brief, is supposed to set out a list of conditions that do automatically qualify. So why would we expect within that list to find something categorically excluding a condition when it's meant to be a list of what is included?
Because the regulation explicitly states that structural GI disorder has been excluded based on the NASH report.
Excluded from the automatic presumption or excluded entirely? It's within a list of the automatic conditions.
Entirely from 3.317, Your Honor, because it's a disease that can be easily, readily diagnosable and can be easily understood. They have symptoms that can be seen because they are associated with physical cause.
So there's another place in the regulation, the little double little I, where it explicitly talks about some conditions like diabetes and multiple sclerosis that can never be qualifying condition under 3.317.
Yes.
Why would structural disorders have been placed in little I 1 as opposed to 2, where the other conditions were being listed that were categorically excluded?
Because, Your Honor, the Secretary was given authority by Congress to do research, scientific research, and add diseases or exclude diseases. And when it added the functional GI disorders in 2011, it also noted that, according to that research, structural GI disorders are different from functional GI disorders. And I believe that they included it in the parentheses for when they included functional, just to make clear that structural GI disorders were not included.
But it's a matter of drafting of the regulation.
Yes, Your Honor.
That language is included in the list of automatic presumptions, not in the more general language later on, where it does talk about certain types of conditions that are categorically excluded. Should we not read a difference into the placement of those particular phrases?
No, Your Honor, because diabetes and MS were actually included in the joint congressional statement, so VA adopted those, and just like the fibromyalgia and functional GI disorders were included in the congressional joint statement. So VA adopted that, and as it was given authority by Congress to include other diseases based on scientific evidence, it also clarified that although functional GI disorders are included, it clarified that structural GI disorders are not included based on scientific evidence.
Or the absence of scientific evidence.
Right. I'm sorry?
Or the absence of scientific evidence. Right?
Yes, Your Honor. But it also clarified that there's a difference between functional and structural GI disorders,
right.
And Congress' intent was to compensate diseases that were not clearly understood, that had symptoms that could not be associated with any physical cause. And in this instance, Your Honor, structural GI disorders are clearly associated with physical cause because they have structural or organic abnormalities, and that's why the VA included in the 2010 Federal Register that GERD and inflammatory bowel diseases have structural organic diseases that have structural abnormalities that can be seen in diagnostic tests. So it was never the intention of Congress to compensate for such diseases. It was only intended to compensate for diseases that did not have any physical cause, were not clearly understood by the medical community, and but not for readily diagnosable diseases such as GERD or diabetes or MS.
How much of, let me just dwell on this for one more second. The lack of evidence, the insufficiency of the evidence led to the excluding structural GERD, right?
Yes,
is it possible that at some point in the future evidence might be sufficient enough to remove that exclusion? Or are you suggesting that because the structural GERD is of such a character that you can see abnormalities that it would never be included?
I believe the Secretary's position is it will never be included because it can be clearly associated to physical cause. So it's not a disease that cannot be understood by the medical community, and that was never the intention of Congress when it created 1117. To compensate diseases that are clearly understood. It was intended to compensate diseases that were not had symptoms that could not be clearly understood and also had diagnoses that were poorly defined or descriptive diagnoses such as chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, functional GI disorders. Those are based on symptom-based criteria and not on objective evidence. So they're descriptive labels put on symptoms that are not clearly understood. And so structural GI disorders are very different because they're clearly understood by the medical community.
Okay.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
If I could just jump in there. In your brief, you said that GERD could not qualify under 3.307 in part because it was diagnosed as a result of upper GI series, that there were diagnostic test results supporting that diagnosis. So are you saying GERD, a diagnosis of GERD alone makes you categorically excluded, or is it based on how that diagnosis came about, the whatever testing that was done?
It's GERD, Your Honor, because it was explicitly listed in the 2011.
Regardless of how it's diagnosed.
Yes. As a structural GI disorder, its very nature is that it has a structural abnormality. So when you go to a doctor and they perform diagnostic tests, they can see what's wrong. They can relate the symptoms to the physical abnormality that they see on the test.
Ms. Fell, let me ask you the same question I asked Mr. McTarnigan regarding the phrase pathophysiology or etiology. Do you read those disjunctively or conjunctively?
Conjunctively, Your Honor. Based
really?
On the recent hearing in Stewart that was argued in this court,
right.
The Secretary's position is still you need both etiology, conclusive etiology and conclusive pathophysiology.
But pathophysiology and etiology are different, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Etiology is the cause and pathophysiology is simply the disease process.
Okay. Thank you.
Your Honor, the appellants concede that she has GERD. She concedes that all the symptoms she has cited are associated with her GERD. She also concedes that her GERD is a structural GI disorder that has been excluded from 3.317. And her only argument that it's that even though it has been excluded under subsection 1, the small I, it should be considered under the two small I's. However, as the Secretary has noted, all subsection 2 does is to explain what constitutes a MOPME for purposes of fulfilling the requirement of subsection 1.
Could I ask one other question, switching gears slightly? I know the Secretary argues that the JMR in this case somehow bars the consideration of anything beyond presumptive connection. And you cite Carter for that purpose. But how can you distinguish this from the JMR in Carter? I mean, it just seems to me that number one, Carter specifically mentioned that one of its bases for finding that in that particular case it, the JMR didn't foreclose anything was citation to Fletcher. And this has citation to Fletcher as well. The JMR vacates the board decision with no limit. It doesn't limit the vacature of the decision. And at the end, it says that on remand, appellant is free to submit additional evidence and arguments regarding his claims. So is the Secretary standing by his position that this JMR limits in a way that Carter didn't?
Your Honor, the Secretary wishes to clarify that although he argued the law of the case in his brief, the more appropriate doctrine is issue exhaustion, and that the court should find that appellant has exhausted her opportunity to challenge the adequacy of Dr. Sanchez's opinion as it relates to direct service connection because she had several opportunities during the joint motion for remand and also in her brief before the board to challenge Dr. Sanchez's opinion related to direct service connection, but chose not to.
Well, why shouldn't we say the argument that you just said to me is waived, considering the first time that I've heard this argument is about 40 seconds ago when you said it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't understand.
You didn't raise that argument in the brief. You didn't tell us that this was going to be a different argument before the argument. Why shouldn't we say, regardless of whether that is a good argument or bad argument, the Secretary simply waived the argument?
Your Honor, the Secretary raised the argument that appellant had an opportunity to challenge Dr. Sanchez's opinion before the board and also in the JMR, but chose not to.
Well, but the JMR remand didn't limit at all any of the arguments, right?
No, Your Honor. In fact, the joint motion for remand notified appellant that she had an opportunity to provide additional arguments or evidence. But appellant, in her brief to the board after the joint motion for remand, only challenged Dr. Sanchez's opinion, adequacy of Dr. Sanchez's opinion as it relates to secondary service connection, but did not mention direct service connection regarding that opinion. So this is the first time appellant is challenging Dr. Sanchez's opinion related to direct service connection. So, Your Honor, the board properly relied on Dr. Sanchez's opinion when it re-adjudicated the issue of direct service connection, because the joint motion for remand did not challenge Dr. Sanchez's opinion, and the appellant's brief to the board did not challenge that opinion either. So the board properly relied on that opinion because there were no additional issues raised regarding that opinion as it related to the direct service connection issue.
I was just about to ask about that opinion, and Judge Allen beat me to it. But if we could turn to the record on page 175, that is Dr. Sanchez's opinion. The appellant argues that the board did not consider whether GERD was aggravated by sinusitis, and it relied upon Dr. Sanchez's opinion here, which in the appellant's view does not adequately address aggravation, right? Does paragraphs B and C on 175 adequately address aggravation?
Yes, Your Honor. Dr. Sanchez opined that according to medical literature, although GERD can cause sinusitis and asthma, sinusitis and asthma cannot cause or aggravate GERD. So Dr. Sanchez relied on medical literature and also noted that appellant reported that she first had sinusitis, then asthma, then acid reflux, then GERD. So Dr. Sanchez opined that although GERD can cause sinusitis and asthma, in this case he did not do so because she first had sinusitis and asthma before she had GERD. And also she opined that GERD is so common it can coexist with these other two diseases without having a common etiology. And also she also opined that when appellant had a surgery, her GERD surgery, her GERD symptoms improved, but her symptoms for sinusitis and asthma did not improve, which means that they did not have common etiology.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? You may conclude, counsel.
Your Honor, the Secretary respectfully asked the court to affirm the board's March 2016 decision because it's not clearly erroneous. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, the language of 3.317 is plain, and it tracks the statute. The Secretary was unable to exclude GERD from the regulation because he was not given the power to do that by 1117. The Secretary was given the power to add disabilities by name, so they were entitled to the automatic presumption of service connection with no further factual or evidentiary development necessary. He was also given the power to afford the presumptions to medically unexplained chronic multi-symptom illnesses without conclusive pathophysiology or etiology with a cluster of signs and symptoms.
So if we buy the argument that the Secretary wasn't given the authority by Congress to exclude categorically things, right, But yet we read 3.317 as categorically excluding structural gastrointestinal diseases. What do we do? Do you follow?
I do. Okay. Well, I think you then this court may rely on subsection 2I as we're suggesting the regulation should be understood in that to get around. That's why the
follow my question. Assume that we you are saying that Congress does not have the authority under 1117 and 1118 to categorically exclude GERD. Right? Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So we take that as a given. Now assume that we read 3.317 to categorically exclude GERD. In other words, that phrase that said excluding structural gastrointestinal diseases. Assume that we read that and we say that is absolutely clear that that is what Congress did. That's what the agency did. So if we accept your argument that Congress didn't give the agency the ability to do that, but yet the regulation does in fact do that, what remedy do you want the court to do?
Well, then I believe we would have a Chevron problem, Your Honor. And I would believe that this court would have to ask the Secretary to clarify the regulation in some way that makes it so GERD is not categorically excluded. But I don't think the court needs to get there, because I think that the court may rely on subsection 2II as an independent basis for finding a disability to be a MUCMI. And so I actually, looking at the Federal Register and looking at the statute, our position is that the parentheses have a very particular meaning because of 1117B's requirement and 1118's requirement that there is a scientific study necessary to add disabilities automatically by name. And so I don't think the court needs to reach that question, Your Honor. I think the appropriate remedy here is for the court to provide the correct interpretation, which I believe our position is the correct interpretation, and remand for the board to adjudicate this case using that interpretation, because the board never got to the question of the disjunctive, whether there's an inconclusive pathophysiology or etiology, because the board hit a wall that it thought existed, which is that GERD could never be a MUCMI. But in fact, the board is wrong. And if this court does find that the regulation is ambiguous, we would submit that it's not a veteran-friendly interpretation of this regulation, because there is another way to interpret this regulation. It's unnecessarily restrictive the way the Secretary is interpreting it, interpreting the plain language, and this court may rely on Trafter to find a more veteran-friendly interpretation of the regulation to have the weight in the force and effect of law.
So let me just follow up with that, Mr. McTarnigan. If we accept your argument that Congress did not give the Secretary authority to remove structural GERD, but the regulation does, which is inconsistent with the statute, then would another option be to declare that section of the statute inconsistent? I mean, that section of the regulation inconsistent with the statute?
May I have a moment, Your Honor?
Sure.
Thank you, Your Honor. We would say yes, Your Honor. The court would have the authority to do that. And I wanted to touch on the discussion of Carter briefly. We agree with you, Judge Allen, that there's no Carter problem in this particular case. The JMR vacated the entirety of the board's decision. It did not affirm any parts of it. There is the Kucharowski language in that decision. But even more than that, the board went there. The board discussed the direct and the secondary service connection arguments. And in fact, the 90-day letter that the veterans representative submitted challenged the adequacy of that examination. And so we believe that this court does have the ability to review the soundness of the board's denial of direct and secondary service connection.
What, if anything, do we do with the point I discussed with counsel for the secretary, which I stole from Judge Meredith, that that the very nature of the JMR could be seen as being inconsistent with the position now being taken that GERD is universally off the table.
Well, I think that can go to the fact that the secretary's interpretation shouldn't be afforded deference because inconsistent positions on this issue shows that it's not the secretary's considered judgment that he is arguing today.
So on that point, though, you know, I don't the secretary hasn't actually used those words here, deference. I mean, it didn't cite Auer, it didn't cite Seminole Rock. But is there anything to be done with the position taken by the secretary earlier in this same case and embodied in a court order that is now, that it seems to me could be entirely inconsistent with the position now? And the reason I'm asking you this question is, you know, that might serve a smaller interest without a larger interest. In other words, if we were to say the secretary is simply bound in this particular case by that position, we wouldn't necessarily reach the meaning of 3.317.
That is true, Your Honor. But I think that, of course, the court could decide in this particular case the secretary is bound by the prior JMR. The secretary didn't cite Auer in the brief, but I do think that we have been talking about the tenets of Auer throughout this entire conversation that we're having today. Whether the statute is ambiguous, which plain meaning is more appropriate given the language of the statute and the regulation. So I think that although the court could do that, I think the court should take that next step, and we ask this court to announce that the plain meaning of the regulation is that subsection 2I and subsection 2II are just two separate ways to satisfy the presumption.
Get you to respond to the Secretary's issue exhaustion argument. When did the appellant first challenge the 2014 exam? And was it on only secondary, or was it on both direct and secondary? When the appellant raised it below?
In the 90-day letter, the appellant challenged the adequacy of the 2014 examination. The specific argument made was only with respect to secondary service connection. However, Your Honor, I think because of the board's decision, I think it can be seen as the board understanding that challenge to be on both bases, because the board adjudicated the direct service connection element of this case. And the reasons and bases are slightly different than those they provided in the prior board decision. And so I think by bringing up the issue and adjudicating the issue, the board understood that 90-day letter to be challenging all aspects of the 2014 examination. And then also, in representing Ms. Atencio, you know, we wanted to also challenge the reasons and bases the board gave on the direct service connection and the underlying medical examination they used to support it. If there are no further questions, Your Honors, we ask that this court remand this case to the board and provide the board with the correct interpretation of the regulation, which is that structural gastrointestinal disabilities in GERD are not categorically excluded for the presumption as a MUCMI on a case-by-case basis with medical evidence supporting. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thank you all for your input. The case is submitted for consideration. The court will now come down and recounsel.
All rise. Where does it reset?